Hello and welcome to the Alligator Sports Podcast. This is the show for Sunday, February 5th, 2012. I am your host, Greg Luca, and I'm joined today by one basketball writer who's super pumped up for our trip to Kentucky. We have John Booth.
Yeah, it's going to be a long grind, but excited to talk a little Florida-Kentucky basketball before we jump on the road.
You know, Kentucky's a long trip, but it's nice once you get there, unlike, you know, some places like the Mississippis of the world where you get there and you wish you were home again already, but...
Oh, yeah, there's nothing wrong with driving through Georgia and Tennessee and up through, you know, God's country into the bluegrass state, so...
Yeah, and we'll actually have some help on the drive this time. It's going to be me, you, and I guess our recruiting expert Brian Holt will be there as well. So we'll have some people going through this trip, and it should be fun times. Unlike last year when I kind of, you know, powered through that whole thing by myself. So we should be able to divide this up and have some fun times, and it'll be an enjoyable trip. And I'm always looking forward to playing in Rupp.
How did you do that? How did you do the full 12 hours up and the full 12 hours back by yourself like that?
Well, it was not easy, but I will tell you, there's a lot about last spring that scarred me emotionally, and I had to spend about 2 months just recovering. So there was a lot of hard work that was involved, and that was just another step along the way. But anyway, on today's show, we're going to talk a lot about the last week of Florida basketball. We're going to get a Kentucky preview in there, obviously. Very much on that. We're going to go player by player and talk about a lot of individual matchups and some bigger picture stuff with that. Before we really get into it, I want to plug our video show, which is up online now. Something we dabbled with last spring. The production quality has greatly improved since then. We're only one show in, so I'm sure we'll be able to keep it up. But we put a lot of work into this one, so I would encourage you guys to all check that out on alligatorsports.org. JJ Booth does some nice impressions in there. He had some fun with that. Can we get a little preview? Can I get a...
Hi, guys! Yeah, I do a little Harry Carey.
So there we go. That's always worth tuning in for. And, again, if you have any feedback, I haven't shouted this out as much lately, but if you have any feedback, you can send us an email at podcast@alligator.org, and with that, we'll get right into some basketball. Okay, before we get into some of the Kentucky stuff, let's talk a little bit about the last week of Florida hoops, and that's 3 home wins, so Booth, why don't you get us caught up a little bit?
Yeah, over the last week or so, Florida has beaten 2 ranked teams in Mississippi State and Vanderbilt, and also... won a little closer than expected game against South Carolina, in which the Gators, you know, shot a season worst percentage from the 3-point line. Really disappointing performance, I'd say, shooting wise. Really haven't seen them shoot that poorly at home since perhaps the Arizona game earlier in the season. That went in a couple overtimes, but yeah, starting out with the Mississippi State game last Saturday, Gators won 69-57. A game that we really thought was going to be, again, a kind of headbutt in between the big men down low. You thought you'd get a lot from Moultrie, Sidney, and then, I guess, on Florida from Young and Murphy, or in a combination.
Some people might have thought they'd do good.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, but again, we really didn't see that. I mean, Moultrie really didn't go off. He had a good stat line, but didn't go off. Sidney was... You know, I think what especially you in the last podcast, what you expected.
He played more than I thought.
He played more, but he really didn't have a huge impact on the game. He had some silly fouls.
He's an idiot.
Yeah, he had a couple bad offensive fouls. But yeah, again, that game, it was won by the guards. I was really impressed with DeBoss from Mississippi State. He kind of carried them offensively. I thought perhaps he dribbled a little too much, tried to break down Florida's pressure. Before this last Vanderbilt game that Florida had, I really liked what Florida did in the press in the Mississippi State game as well, kind of frustrating their guard play a little bit. But, yeah, so Florida wins that game by 12 points. And
before you move on from that one thing I want to talk about, the opposite end of that, I thought one of the huge keys for Florida was that they only turned it over 5 times. And they didn't shoot a great percentage, and they didn't rebound all that well, and there was a lot of statistical areas where they were behind. But when you can force some turnovers with your pressure – and you're only turning the ball over 5 times, given the amount of weapons that they have on offense, you're going to put some points in the basket if you keep giving yourself that many chances to score. So I think that's something that's been key for them all year and showed there.
Like you said, that's really crippled them whenever they play a ranked team this year or any kind of matchup that's even somewhat high. It seems like the turnover problem, like Billy has said in the past, if we can keep it under, like, say, under 12 or under 13 at home, and, you know, under 15 on the roads, kind of like in that area, you're good. Obviously,
that's not even asking a ton either.
That's not asking a ton, but in the games that they're losing, I mean, it's 20 turnover games.
Right.
You know, and that's, there's no way that you can win those games against a decent team like that. But yeah, moving on to the South Carolina game, again, it was this was a game where Florida jumped out really early. They had a 16-point lead, I believe, midway through the first half, and then they just went cold. Kenny Boynton was held without a three for a long time. You know, a lot of guys were really, really struggling in that game, and truly what it was, I mean, you look at what Kentucky was able to do against South Carolina. Today's Sunday, so that happened on Saturday. They won by about 30 points against them, and you would have said midway through the first half, okay, this is what Florida is on pace to do.
Perhaps. Right, right.
They're on pace to blow this team out. When they played in Columbia, when the Gators played them there, South Carolina actually had a one-point lead at halftime, but that was just because South Carolina was their first game getting Bruce Ellington back from the football team, and he just made everything. He was knocking down crazy, insane shots. They shot, you know, above 50% from the three-point line for the first time in a half that season. So it was really a remarkable first-half performance from them. But in this game, you didn't see that from South Carolina. They didn't play amazing. Florida out-rebounded them, but I believe, you know, about 18 by the end of the game. It was something like that, a very wide margin. Brad Beal was able to tear it up on the boards. He had a double-double, 11 rebounds, five of them on the offensive boards, which he hadn't had more than two in six previous combined SEC games. So right. it really boiled down to just the way Florida shot the ball was the reason why they only won by, you know, 8 points against South Carolina. It really should have been closer to probably a 20-point victory if they would have shot the way they're capable of.
Right, and you look at the five or six or seven or so in that area games before that, their offensive rebounding had been about half as good as it was mm-hmm. over the start of the season. And that game against South Carolina grabbed 20 offensive rebounds, which is a huge number. And a lot of that had to do with when you get to face a zone, it's harder for the other team to block out, and that gives you some lanes that you can crash and get more offensive rebounds. But on top of that, South Carolina mixed in a lot of man, too, and Florida was just crashing the boards better than they had in a while. So that was a pleasant change for Florida fans to see in that game.
Yeah, yeah. And then, you know, they followed that up. And just to kind of preface that, in three of their previous four games before that, Florida had been out-rebounded by opponents. So it was really impressive for them to kind of get back on track against a team that was the SEC's top defensive rebounding team in South Carolina, surprisingly. That kind of blew me away when I looked at it. I was like trying to think of, okay, who's their dominant rebounder inside? But sure enough, they were the top defensive rebounding team in the SEC. So going into the Vanderbilt game, which occurred on Saturday early afternoon, against a Vandy team that's been inconsistent, much like Florida has at times this season. They've dropped a couple games that they shouldn't have. Certainly the suspension of their center, Festus Ezeli, hurt with that. Little continuity kind of problems there. Mm. But Florida wound up winning the game by 8 points, 73-65. And this was really a game where you saw, and really for the first time all year, I think I've seen Florida with these huge shifts of momentum, where they would get up by 7 or 8, and then Vandy would come charging back, and then Florida would get up by 7 or 8. And it happened three or four times where they were really, you know, it looked like a great boxing match out there. You know, they'd have them on the ropes, and you'd, okay, Florida can get this double-digit lead if just somebody hits a three, or they, you know, they keep this up. But Vandy charged back each time. It was a four-point game under a minute left, and much like it was the entire game, Kenny Boynton and Jeffrey Taylor for Vanderbilt were trading threes. Kenny had a three with a minute and 1 second left that made it a 7-point game. And then Florida went into its press, which was very effective for most of the game. Caused about, what was it, 17?
17 is the number I had.
17 turnovers, and really got quite a few points off of that in the game. It really frustrated Vanderbilt. It was surprising to see. But in this one sequence with a minute left, you know, Florida gets into their press, and for really one of the first times all game, Vanderbilt breaks it easily, and Jeffrey Taylor gets a wide open spot up three in the corner, knocks it down. It's a 4-point game, and he was a 20-point scorer in the game. Taylor was they held Jenkins, you know, to about 9 shots from the field. He had about, 14 or 15?
I think in that range,
In that range. So it was, you know, it was certainly a solid game from him. It wasn't his best, but he was effective. But back to the press, Florida was really able to frustrate Vanderbilt in a way that I don't think too many people thought they would be able to do that. I mean, certainly you would think after Vanderbilt kind of struggled against Arkansas with their press that Kevin Stallings, coach for Vanderbilt, would be able to kind of get it back on track, but that it really wasn't the case. I was really shocked by the way, you know, a guy like Will you get for Florida, who's a 6'7 forward, could work at the front of the press and really disrupt Vanderbilt in the way that he did. So altogether, it was, you know, it was kind of an impressive run for Florida over these last three games, being able to beat two ranked teams. You know, of course, all three of their games were at home. They'll have to step out to Kentucky on Tuesday and, you know, face a team there that, that hasn't lost at home for a really long time.
Right, yeah. You mentioned the press, and I thought that was definitely the key to the game there, that 17 turnovers were critical. And that sparked a lot of the runs you were talking about. If there's a play where you can get a bucket and then you can get into the press and have time to set it up while they get the ball from out of the net, and then, you know, you get a Kenny Boynton situation where it's a steal and it's another lay-in, and then you get another steal. And I thought something that was critical was they didn't do the press right away, but once Brad Tinsley checked out, who's Vanderbilt's primary point guard, they went to it, and then those first two possessions after he was on the bench, they were able to force turnovers. And then even after they came back, after he came back in, it was still very effective for them. And there were a couple instances where I saw Vanderbilt break it, and, you know, there was a few of the Jeffrey Taylor open threes, which you really shouldn't allow given he's like a 46% shooter,
yeah.
But that kind of stuff is going to happen when you're trying to get that kind of pressure. But overall, yeah, I thought it was very good, and then there were some instances where they got beat and got back and still were able to get a stop. So I thought it was very, very strong showing from the press in general, like you said. On the offensive end is something I want to talk about, because over the last two games, obviously two wins, but they have shot 38 and 37%. Is there any concern from you about where the offense is coming from and why they're shooting so poorly over the last couple games, or just a rough stretch?
I mean, you really can't call it a rough stretch, being we've kind of seen this continue through eight games in SEC play. I mean, they've had spots where they've shot brilliantly, certainly, you know, where they've hit over 50%, like felt like the norm certainly during the non-conference, but it's been tougher for them to get those, and I don't even necessarily know if it's good looks, but it's just been tougher for them, it seems, to knock down their shots. I feel like most of the time, it's not the quality of their looks aren't as good as they used to be. It's just perhaps they've slowed down a little bit. Perhaps what we saw in the non-conference, you know, about, you know, not having to work as hard defensively, not having as tired of legs late in games is contributing to that. Now in conference play, to kind of the percentages slipping a little bit. I think a guy like Kenny Boynton is really the, you know, kind of typifying what Florida is playing like so far. It's extremely streaky. He's stringing a couple good games together, and then he'll fall off, stringing a couple good games together, and then falling off. Brad Beal, I think out of anybody on the team, he's probably playing the most consistent right now. He's taking threes. Probably taking about, you know, four or five a game.
Right.
But he's doing the most as far as penetrating towards the basket, working hard on the offensive glass to get follows. And Florida needs a little bit more of that, you know, now that we're in the thick of SEC play. You're going to have to start playing teams twice after they've already seen you earlier in the season. So it's definitely going to get more difficult for them. I don't expect it to spike back up like it did earlier in the year.
Right. I kind of agree with you. I think obviously the defenses you face in the SEC are tougher than what you face in the non-conference, although the SEC isn't the best basketball conference out there. It's still better than the Yales and the Wright States of the world. But I think given the offensive talent, you can expect that to turn around, and there is just going to be a little streaks from time to time. But one thing you touched on that I want to get into is Brad Beal. And when we did our first basketball podcast of the semester 2 or 3 weeks ago, we ranked the starters, and we had Kenny number one, and I think Brad was number two at that point. And when we look at over the last few games, Brad Beal has 17.3 points, 7.3 rebounds, 2 assists, and only 1.7 turnovers over the last 3 games. And on top of that, over the last 7 games, he's shooting 43.3% from 3, which is something that we had kind of had been the knock on him, because he's still around 33% for the season, even with that good stretch. So is he now the best player on this team? And if not, has he closed the gap between himself and Kenny at least?
Well, he's certainly, yeah, and I think he's closed that gap with Kenny. I don't think you can take away what Kenny did for this team earlier in the season. If you're talking about this on a scope for an entire season, what a single player has done for the team, certainly I think what Brad's doing right now with Patrick Young being a little banged up with tendonitis, who knows what this little funk we're seeing out of him is. But for Brad Beal to be able to rebound the way that he's doing at the moment at his current pace, it's really impressively. But offensively, when you're comparing him and a guy like Kenny or him and a guy like Irving, it's what he's able to facilitate in the offense, and that he doesn't need to, you know, when everything bogs down around the perimeter, he doesn't need to force that shot. He's the one guy who can kind of get in a little bit closer. He's one guy who can drive. And really, you know, you see it with a couple highlight plays from him, is he can really elevate and
make a play. That dunk the other day.
Yeah, and make a play above the rim, which is something that, unfortunately, Kenny just can't do. He's 6'2", maybe.
Right.
On a good day, he, you know, certainly he can dunk the ball on a fast break or something like that. But
he can do his kind of like drop it in from above the rim thing.
Yeah. But he's, you know, you saw it against Vanderbilt and against Mississippi State. He can get his shot blocked a lot when he's driving down the lane. I mean, there's nothing in his elevation that's going to get it away from, you know, from a 7-foot guy or 6'10" guy or something like Brad Beal can work his body and use kind of his size and his strength to at least draw a foul, where a lot of times I think Kenny can get a shot blocked pretty easily when he's driving down the lane.
So you think Beal's closing the gap, but right now you'd still take Kenny?
As for the whole season, but, you know, I mean, Brad's really carried them so far through SEC play, I think. You know, you look at what he did during the South Carolina game, where he starts out 1-for-6 for the field and rebounds to finish 5-for-10. So it's, you know, he can really bounce back, and he's really cognizant when his shot from three isn't falling and he just stops. You know,
right.
which is something you see, like Kenny and Irv, they shoot through their problems. Mm-hmm. You know, at three, if their threes aren't working, we'll keep on shooting. If we get open looks, we'll keep on shooting. Brad Beal, he's freshman. We've talked numerous times about how humble he is, but it's his ability to not have to shoot through his problems. If his open threes aren't falling, he can find a better shot, a more high percentage shot, and he can go to that. Whereas Kenny and Irv can't go to that a lot of times, and I think that's why Brad Beal, when you look at it right now, and I know it's, you know, it's going to be a little bit before he's going to have to make a decision about the NBA, but, you know, in the preseason we probably would have said Patrick Young is the, you know, probably stone cold lottery pick out of this team. I don't know.
Right.
Brad Beal, you know, certainly we knew he's going to be a great shooter and all of that, but I think if you were, you know, going to take a bet on, I think you'd say that, you know, that Patrick Young was, okay, he's the guy that the NBA scouts are going to be salivating.
Right, just for that athleticism. But, I mean, Beal showed a lot of that, too.
Yeah. I think if you were going to ask a lot of NBA scouts who's the best Florida player, I mean, I think hands down, they would say Brad Beal at the moment.
Right. You look at was it the South Carolina game where he had the huge dunk, the slam that wound up on the top plays?
Yeah.
In that game alone, he had that play. He had one dunk that he nearly missed where he was fouled on it and almost had a similarly impressive play. And then he had a chase down block. And all three of those plays were kind of a different sort of athleticism that you forget he has a lot of times because his game is so smooth. I think that gets lost in there, that he can make those explosive athletic plays like that. Moving on a little bit, I want to talk about Patrick Young. He's been struggling the last few games. Over the last two games, combined, 7 points, 9 rebounds, and a block. I mean, that's almost one good game. Almost. So
yeah,
what's going on with Patrick Young right now?
I mean, we really don't know. I mean, Billy said in this last game he got against Vanderbilt, he got his first start in 5 games, and he was out there for about 3 minutes in the first half, drew 2 fouls, had to be taken off. And it's really hard to figure out what's wrong with Patrick Young, because at this point it seems like the ankle's fine. I mean, I don't know if we can still say that the tendonitis or whatever it was in his right ankle is still bugging him. I think that's, you know, he's had, you know, going on 3 weeks now to kind of figure that out and get that better. And really with, you know, his decreased minutes and practice time in practice. Or playing time or practice, it really should be healthy by now. you know, and you really can't see him when he's running up and down the court that it's bothering him.
Right.
So,
some people say that they can see it. Like, it goes around on Twitter that, like, if he was healthy, this would be different, and I feel like he's not moving well. I don't see it, and apparently you don't either, but...
When he's in full, like, in full sprint, like, his, like, kind of, like, gait is a little messed up to where it just kind of looks like his ankle is extremely taped up. What they probably have is they probably have a brace underneath, and then they tape over it, and they just have it locked up. Because they know he doesn't have to have a ton of mobility down there. You know, all he's really doing is shuffling his foot. His foot, and his right is his main pivot foot most of the time anyway. So it's, you know, he doesn't really need to be stretching that out too much. So, at this point, I would say that it's more mental with him. I don't know if you've noticed it. I've seen a definite rise in him talking back to officials.
Huh.
Over the last couple of games.
I had not made a note of that, but that's something I'll keep an eye on.
Yeah, I mean, I saw him just about any time that he missed a shot or a foul was called against him, it was a lot of chatter back to the officials. And at one point, Florida was setting up for a press, and he was, you know, and the play was going on, and Patrick was still looking back at the official moving his leg, you know, back and forth being, oh, you know, I didn't travel. This was my pivot foot, and all of that, and then Billy saw that, yanks him out for Will You Get. You know, I don't know if Billy said anything to him about, you know, on the bench, about, you know, hey, you know, cut it out, focus. You know, you're already getting played few enough minutes as it is. But, you know, at this point, you look what Will You Get's doing, and, you know, if Brad Beal's maintaining his scoring average, Kenny Boynton is scoring, you're getting 10 points from Mike Rosario last night. Do you really need Patrick Young or a lot of inside scoring at the moment for this Florida team? I mean, if you're going to be getting those 10 points from Mike Rosario off the bench and you're going to be getting the kind of rebounding you're getting from Will You Get, certainly Florida needs Patrick Young to be playing better going forward.
Right.
And they need a lot more of Billy, you know, preaches about that. He's one of the main keys to this team is if we can get Patrick Young going, we're going to be, you know, heading in a pretty special direction. But I don't think it's going to happen this season.
When we talk about Patrick Young, it's something I hate when people talk about a guy just for his physical presence and just his size and what he brings in that way. But there is a little bit of value in that he's clearly the biggest, strongest guy. And when other teams have a guy like Azili in there, it makes a difference when you have a Patrick Young on him than when you have an Eric Murphy or a Will You Get on him. Just because those are much smaller players who are more liable to be pushed around. Although I did think you get held his own against Azili with Young in foul trouble.
Yeah, at this moment, if you told me I could have two Patrick Youngs on my team or two Will You Gets, I'll take two Will You Gets. You know, that's the way I'm kind of looking at it right now. I like what Will does for this Florida team in order to press. And certainly Patrick can't do that. You have to put him in the back of the press. He's really not blocking shots.
He's blocking a few, but not as many as he should be.
Not as many as he should be. I mean, Florida is last in the SEC in blocked shots this season, which is absolutely astounding that when you have, you know, a guy like Patrick Young, you know, a 6'11 guy who's pushing 7 feet.
And considering Eric Murphy has blocked shots at a much higher rate than anybody would have expected for Eric Murphy.
And they're still last. I believe they have like 79 on the season. Kentucky has more like 283, it feels like.
Well, I know Anthony Davis averages 4.8 and Florida averages 4, so.
Yeah, so there you go. And Grant, Will You Get's not going to be blocking shots because he has a – and Billy likes it, but he gets such low kind of leverage on other players when he's playing defense. He gets more around their belly button level, whereas you see Patrick and a lot of guys, you know, with their hands straightened up there and trying to get as big as possible. Will You Get's more looking for, hey, he's going to make a mistake and bring the ball down too low, and I'm going to be able to snatch it.
And he does get a lot of steals that way.
And he does get a lot of steals. So, yeah, at this moment, any increased production out of Patrick Young would be a plus for Florida. I don't understand how he's not getting back on track right now just because of an ankle injury, how that's going to completely derail his season. I think perhaps something a little bit more is going on with him mentally or with his confidence or something like that, or he's just not feeling comfortable out on the court running the floor, whether Florida's playing at a higher pace and he just doesn't feel like he's fitting in right now. But certainly, you know, they've got to figure out some way for him, or I just think they should start will you get?
It's interesting because last year there was a lot of talk with Patrick Young about kind of the expectations of people who wanted him to go to the NBA, thinking he needs to do this, that, and the other thing more. And just there was a time around Christmas where apparently he had a meeting with Billy and the guys and the other assistant coaches, and they kind of were just like, this is what we need you to do for us to be successful. That's your role. That's what it is. You have to accept it. And if you do that, the NBA stuff and everything else will come with time. And maybe he's back to the point of being frustrated again and listening to the wrong people telling him how he should be and what he's supposed to play like. But it's something that definitely remains to be seen. To move to the backcourt a little bit, over the last couple of games, Kenny and Irv both shot about 35%, but with the assists and the lack of turnovers, 22-8 over the last three games between them, is that really all they have to do? Can this team win with, you know, Beal scoring, Murphy scoring, Rosario scoring, and those two really just taking care of the ball and providing some scoring, but not as dominant as they've been in the past?
Yeah, I mean, I'm fine with Walker around the 8 to 10 point mark per game. And with a lot of that perhaps coming off of free throws,
yeah,
late in the game perhaps, you know, a lot of times it feels like, okay, he's knocking down a three or two threes and then four free throws. You know, he's not getting a lot of, you know, points in the paint or a lot of mid-range jumpers or anything like that. So I'm fine with that production as long as he's keeping the assist-to-turnover ratio down. Kenny, on the other hand, it's great what he's done with, you know, I think in a two-game stretch against Ole Miss and Mississippi State. He didn't have, you know, any turnovers whatsoever, had seven assists, but he only scored 14 points over those two games. And I really think in both of those, you know, that Florida really, really missed his impact, you know, scoring the ball. And I don't think you can count on Eric Murphy and Mike Rosario showing up each game because they need such, even more than Kenny, they need such specific kind of, such a specific environment in order to be able to score. Mike Rosario, you can't have him on the court for 30 minutes. I mean, you just, even on a night where he's on fire, even though he's playing great defense right now, much improved from what he was earlier in the season, but he still takes too many bad shots. He will airball threes. He did twice,
yeah,
you know, again against Vanderbilt. So it's one of those things where you're going to also have to worry about Eric Murphy. You know, he's disappeared in a couple of games so far in SEC play where he's just not getting the open three-point look. They're trying to shut him down, and he can't do anything else offensively. Mm-hmm. So really the two keys to this team scoring-wise are Kenny and Brad. And Brad's going to be able to get you your points in a variety of ways, but you need Kenny to at least be the one consistent three-point shooter on your team.
Well, he can drive to the basket a little bit too. He's been good when he puts the ball on the floor this year and throughout his career.
Yeah,
it's just before
this
season he hasn't done it enough, I don't think. But
yeah, but I'm talking on a consistent three-point shooter because
right.
Brad's not that.
Not,
you know, not yet. Not, anyways, he's not consistent. He can have great games.
We'll see. I mean,
but he's not consistent. I think Kenny's consistent. He's only had two games this season where he's held without a three-pointer for much of the season. He was the nation's leader in made three-pointers. So
right.
I think, you know, if you're going to get decreased production from Irv from the three, you can't count on Rosario. If you can get at least consistent from Boynton and get one or two from everybody else, then that's a good place for this team to be because they're not going to get points inside.
Right. Well, one thing I want to mention is that given what we know about Beal coming out of high school and what we've seen the last few games, I wouldn't be surprised if he shot 40-45% from three the rest of the season. And kind of shed the inconsistent label as the year went on. Just because he got off to a rough start for whatever reason, the transition, something was wrong about it. But I would not be surprised if he kept up the rate he's been at the last few games for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I really think the key to him is again, limiting his attempts. He's not going to have a game where he shoots 8 three-pointers, I don't think. I think he's going to strive for those 3 for 5 nights, 4 for 5 nights, and pick the wide-open ones. He's not going to shoot a lot with a hand coming in his face like Kenny does at times.
Anyway, not to get too far off topic, I'm also fine with the team where Walker and Boynton are, or at least Walker is mostly an assist guy, a true point guard if he can do that, and doesn't jack up as many shots and doesn't make as many mistakes, and we've seen his turnover numbers come way down, and that's been key. Kenny, you do need more. You do need him to be that key three-point shooter, but the other guy you talked about is Mike Rosario, and, you know, there's plays where he drives a lane and he hits a floater and he makes a good play, and there's times where he gets an open three and just swishes it, and then like minutes later he's, you know, airballing, turning it over. Like, what is his deal? Like, how is a player this inconsistent when we thought he was going to be a solid spark off the bench, not a guy where you have to ride through the ups and downs.
Yeah, and that's really what he's turned into. Okay, Mike Rosario can score, you know, 6 points in a minute.
Like, right.
He can hit those back-to-back three-pointers. He can draw fouls at times. You know, he can, like you said, he can hit those tough runners in the lane where he's just floating it up and doesn't even try to go for the backboard. So, you know, he can hit those shots, certainly, but Billy Donovan has to kind of, okay, Mike's hit a couple shots. He's going to keep shooting. You know, he's not going to turn that off. He knows that he's kind of this instant offense right now, and you give him 3 or 4 minutes tops, and then you have to get him on the floor because he's just going to keep on shooting. Once he feels like okay, I'm feeling it on the floor, I'm scoring these points, I have to keep on scoring, you know, right, in order for Billy to keep me in because my defense is lacking at times.
Well, the thing about that is over the last few games, I think he's shown up a lot more for taking charges and making deflections than anything else.
Yeah, he was great in the press against Vanderbilt. He drew a charge. Billy kept him in, man-to-man defense. I mean, there was a lot of mismatches that Vanderbilt could have really, you know, pursued against Florida when you look at Mike Rosario and kind of the three-point shooters that they have and kind of, you know, rolling a guy like John Jenkins or Jeffrey Taylor, who Mike Rosario had to play at times last night and guard against, and they weren't really able to exploit him. Mike Rosario specifically from what I saw, and certainly for him to be in and Billy to let him work the sidelines on the press, I mean, that was a pretty big vote of confidence for him, and he took a charge right in front of his coach.
The last note I want to make on Rosario is, did you see the inbound pass he threw that came up like 10 feet short yesterday? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
That was the worst inbound pass I've ever seen.
That was one of the worst, and he got cute. I forget, it was against the Mississippi State game. He got really cute, and he did an inbounds pass off the back of Bernardo
Sidney's.
Oh, he's
done that twice, right?
Yeah, off the back of Bernardo Sidney's back and then scored a 2-point. So, you know,
take the good with the bad.
Yeah, you'll take the good with the bad. He can not too many players are savvy enough to generate points by themselves after they inbound the ball.
Right.
So, yeah, it's one of those things that's been the kind of the theme of Mike Rosario all season is he can get into double digits, you know, in a very short amount of time, but you really have to limit his impact on the court.
Right. There's a lot of
the whole game.
There's a lot of moments of greatness, and there's also a lot of spells of just terrible, terrible play.
Yeah, just I still don't understand how he might lead the team in air balls, I think.
Yeah, he's got it.
He's
got
to be.
Who else is even a contender?
Yeah, I mean, Kenny does an air ball. Brad had one.
Irv put up one or two in his day.
Yeah, Irv's had a few, but certainly this season.
It's just it's
Michael just takes some shots where he does not care about his base being set. He's like, I have a great follow through, man. I have a great frame. I can be fading to the left or the right. It doesn't matter. It's not going to airball. And every once in a while it does.
Yeah,
it's really bad.
Fortunately, it doesn't quite work out that
way.
Okay, so now we're about ready to move into our Kentucky preview. And after the game against Vanderbilt, Kenny Boynton said something to the effect, this is a good time to be playing them, and this is a matchup that they feel fairly good about, all things considered. But when I look at what UF is coming off of and what Kentucky is coming off of, I have a hard time thinking that this is a good time for this matchup. You look at this, UF played Thursday, Saturday, and now they have to play in Kentucky on Tuesday. Kentucky is coming off a game that they just won by 34 points. They haven't lost since December 10th. They got to rest all their guys yesterday because they were up by so much. They've won 48 in a row at Rupp, and now they're playing against a team that's 2-4 on the road, and they've won their last three games by a combined 83 points. So how is this a good matchup and a good time to be having this game? I don't understand.
Yeah, I think what Kenny was meaning to say, if we don't do it this year, no other SEC team is going to be able to get it done.
Well, then that's the right answer.
Yeah, I think he was saying, well, yeah, somebody's going to do it. We're going to be the ones to do it. You know, Vanderbilt's not going to do it. Tennessee isn't. Nobody else is going to win at Rupp this year. We're going to be the ones. But certainly he felt confident. Irving Walker likes where they're at right now. They all keep talking about how, you know, okay, all the tough games that we've come back and, you know, that these tough games and not just blowing out teams by 20 every night, that's helped us. But I'll take the team who's blowing out teams by 30 points in conference over the team who struggled against them, you know, just to, you know, claw their way past them, you know, a couple days earlier.
Exactly.
And we're talking about South Carolina, who, of course, you know.
Gave UF about, all they could handle,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, in really a game where they shouldn't, like we said before, but.
Well, you talk about, this team hasn't played on the road in a while, so we might have forgotten this, but they don't have a quality road win yet, and they're 2-4 in those games. Are you worried about the road struggle coming back, or is that something you think they're kind of over in terms of there being a major difference from playing at home to playing in a hostile environment?
I think that, you know, this could be in the same caliber of the Ohio State-Syracuse games. I don't think that was a problem of being on the road. The Ohio State and Syracuse, they would have lost probably in a similar way at home. I thought they played,
I could see that.
I thought they played fairly well in both of those games. Both of those
again
teams,
the turnovers though. That's,
but those teams cause turnovers against anybody.
Right.
Nobody has a good turnover game against Syracuse's. You know, nobody has a good turnover day when they're going against Aaron Kraft and Ohio State. So it's, you know, it's the two Rutgers. It's the Rutgers game and it's the Tennessee game where you're like, oh wow, they just, they didn't show up. They weren't all there for that. And it reared its head. Honestly, against Ole Miss, where they go down 20-4 in the first half of that game, and you're like, oh, geez, you know, I'm going to have to start prepping, you know, stories about road
woes again.
And working up questions to ask Billy about that again. You know, so certainly it's there. I see it more against, I've seen it more against the lesser quality opponents this year, because I think, you know, if they played the way they did against Ohio State and Syracuse, they beat Rutgers, they beat Tennessee, they didn't play down. Against either of those two top five teams earlier in the year.
So, I mean, do you think there's a correlation there to playing down to your opponent on the road, something like that, or
yeah,
is that just how it's worked
out?
I
think it's broad. I think it's playing down to your opponent. I don't think Florida, with the exception of the Georgia game, I don't think Florida has really had a true dominating performance against another team.
That's interesting.
It's another, I should say, another
not like the Wright State kind of team games.
Yeah,
with the
saying,
real, yeah.
Yeah, a team in a major conference that if they won their tournament, you know, if you said that they would win their tournament at the beginning of the year, you wouldn't be shocked, you know, in a major conference. So, you know, I think that heading into this game, you know, I don't think that the road woes where they're just, you know, they don't completely show up. I think this game means too much. I think they understand what impact it could have on their season and kind of the final legacy for perhaps some of these players like Irving Walker, you know, maybe a guy like Kenny who could decide to go pro, guys like Young and Beal. It could be really something that vaults Florida into, you know, a top three seed, you know, talk definitely by the end of the year.
All right, well, let's get a little bit deeper into the Kentucky game. We'll start with the UF offense against the Kentucky defense, and to me, this is the strength on strength of this matchup. The Florida offense is obviously the number one in adjusted offensive efficiency, and Kentucky is number six in adjusted defensive efficiency because they're so able to guard people with the amount of long, athletic people that they have on the floor. When you look at that matchup, what does UF have to do to be successful against the Wildcats defense? What's the key there? What's their strategy, their plan of attack for this game?
Well, certainly, I mean, I don't think that the whole inside-out approach is really going to work for them in this game. They're going to really have to be good at driving and dishing out. I don't think they're going to be able to work the ball into a guy like Patrick or, you know, and they can't. They don't do it for Will Youget. They never pass it into him and count on him to have good enough vision to kick it back out to somebody. So I think, you know, with the game that Patrick's coming off of and really the last couple games, I think that's out of the equation. And they haven't worked that the last couple games.
Yeah.
So I think certainly you're going to have to count on some sort of mismatch. If you can get Brad Beal on somebody that, you know, if you can get their switches up on the double screens that Florida likes running, you can get the ball into Brad Beal's hands or Eric Murphy in the corner. I mean, those are the only two players that I see getting high-quality shots against Kentucky. I think that, you know, if Kenny wants to get a three off, it's going to be with a hand in his face.
True. A lot of times that's not a problem for him.
A lot of times that isn't a problem for him, but, you know, they're going to have to shoot an astounding percentage from three-point line, I think, to not only win, but kind of stay in contact for much of the game.
I agree with you there, and I think they're going to have to hit some tough, long shots because when you look at just position by position, we'll go into it a little deeper later, but Kentucky has a length and athleticism advantage, 1 through 5, and it's just going to be tough for anybody to beat the man across from them, and that was what we saw a little bit when Florida played Kentucky last year, it was just like Kentucky was just slightly better at every position, and that's just what it came down to. And I mean, when you can guard somebody that well, it just makes it difficult for Florida to get off the kind of open looks that they've enjoyed against some of these other teams.
Yeah, and what it really harkens back to is probably the last, you know, super really talented team that Florida played that had that kind of length and athleticism was Syracuse, and Florida was really desperate in a lot of situations with the shot clock. It was really forced down really late, and they made some of those really desperate long-range threes, especially Kenny did in the second half, to keep Florida in contact with a chance to, you know, hypothetically win in the last 5 minutes if they would have been able to knock down a couple more shots. But, you know, Kentucky, I think they're going to be able to do just about the same thing where it's, you know, Florida is going to have one of those games where, okay, we're a three-point shooting team. This has been, you know, what we've relied on all season. We're going to have a little bit of luck in that this is the game that we're on. And because they're just – they're not going to win if they're shooting 35% from the three.
Right.
You know, I don't think it's going to have to be well above that in the range from 45 to 50.
And one thing that's interesting is Kentucky's a team that has pressed a little bit. So where you look at a team like against Syracuse, they can just get a 25-footer whenever they want. Kentucky won't even give you that more often than not. So you're going to have to fight for every look, no matter where it's from.
But we really haven't seen this team like go up against a press, especially a team that presses well too very often. So that's a little bit of an unknown quantity there. Do, you know, how we think Florida will deal with that. I like how they would do it. I think Irving Walker and Kenny Boynton work well in the past when there has been pressure. They have a really good kind of idea of where each other are and that kind of like look like, all right, get the hell out of my way. I'm going to try to, you know, break this myself or, hey, stay back with me.
Well,
I need help.
That part they can do, but I feel like where you run into trouble is if Irv gets trapped and he's so short, then you're in trouble trying to pass it out of that.
Yeah, you saw that just for like a glimmer of that towards the end of the Florida game against Vanderbilt where, you know, Vanderbilt was desperate in the last 36, 40 seconds, and they kind of sprung on a press that Florida wasn't ready for, clearly. It was just, there were two guys back there. It was Beal passing the ball in, and then Kenny was kind of back, and then with Irv. And, you know, Irv got hit by a trap, and it could have really been a situation where Kentucky gets the, or not Kentucky, but Vanderbilt gets the steal, and it's a 1-2 possession game
right,
again.
Right.
And then, you know, obviously Florida's, you know, having to sweat it out a little bit late in the game. But I think they'll be prepared for that. I don't know how well they're going to be able to prep with it, with their depth, going to be able to give them good looks. I mean, a guy like Casey Prather is going to be good on the second team challenging you in practice. But I just don't think they've seen it enough this season to say that, oh, it'll be – you know, they shouldn't have a problem with it.
Right.
I think it'll be an issue on the road.
Right. And when you look at the flip side, you got the UK offense versus the UF defense. What most concerns me is how UF is going to match up in the front court athletically with Patrick Young. And not, he's not the problem as much as a guy like Eric Murphy going against Terrence Jones and Anthony Davis. What do you see from the Kentucky offense-Florida defense matchup?
Yeah, either way that you swing it, there will be a mismatch. And kind of the way that we thought the Mississippi State game might go, where, okay, it's either Moultrie or Sidney will have a good game against one of the Florida guys. Maybe not we thought that, but a lot of the national people did.
Mm-hmm.
But against Kentucky, there's that three deep, you know, front court. They have a guy themselves, and I'm forgetting his name. The tall white guy who plays a lot like Murphy.
Wilshire?
Yeah, Wilshire, who you know, who can step out and he can hit shots as well. So no matter where you're kind of looking at, there is going to be those two guys who can revolve in that front court. And Patrick Young and Will you get can't take care of all those guys. There's going to be a mismatch on Murphy for any time that he's on the court.
Now, the one thing that I would say would be Florida's saving grace, if this was a home game, would be the opportunity to press and maybe force a few turnovers, but on the road, that's something that Billy seems less likely to try to do. How do you think the press has any chance of being effective against Kentucky?
Yeah, he doesn't really like to press, and like maybe on the road, I should say, and maybe if they kind of do the same strategy they did against Vanderbilt and they let things kind of settle in, and he sees the opportunity. Okay, after the 16-minute timeout, let's jump into it real quick, and you know, in a game like this where, you know, it's late in the season, and you know, teams are able to really know what, how the other is going to attack each other. Maybe that'll be the key, a couple turnovers here and there that generate the extra possessions. But this isn't going to be a game where Florida is going to, I don't think, even dare to press 70% of the time.
Right.
After they make a shot or out of timeouts or off of an inbound or anything like that. I don't think that going off of, what is it, it's 3 games in 6 days almost, mm-hmm. that they're going through right now, that they're going to have much left in the tank to press for an entire game. Certainly, they delved pretty deep into the bench against Vanderbilt, which was, like, you know, in the first half when you have Casey Prather out there, yeah, and Will begin playing heavy minutes. And you're like, okay, Billy, perhaps trying to save some legs for, you know, for Kentucky, but there's no way they're going to be able to maintain that kind of pressure against Kentucky.
I totally agree. An activity I had fun with for this game was trying to rank the starters 1 to 10 because there's so much talent on both sides. And like I said, we alluded to this earlier. When we talked about breaking down Florida starters just 2 or 3 weeks ago, I felt like after one you could go any number of ways. And with Kentucky, it's a little bit more defined, but it's a lot of the same thing where there's just a lot of talented players and you have some trouble figuring out where they go. So I went through and did my rankings. You can feel free to comment, and we'll adjust it as we need to. But I started off, obviously, with Anthony Davis, who, 6'10 center. I think he's a lock to be the number one pick in the NBA draft, just because of how well he moves at that size, averaging 13.9 points, 10.1 rebounds, and somehow 4.8 blocks per game, which is just ridiculous. He's also got more assists than turnovers, which is something, like, big guys, that's not easy to do.
No.
He's just, like, he's just such a great player in every way. And, I mean, I have a hard time putting anybody else aside from him number one. Would you agree?
No, yeah, definitely. I mean, we've talked about it numerous times in the office about, Al, you know, he's one of these late bloomer big guy types that really hit a growth spurt late in high school, kind of late in their development as a player. And he's, you know, you can tell he has a lot better sense of the game than most big guys do. In the fact that he can read when guards are going to, you know, are going to try what kind of shot that they are to be able to block it. And the fact that he's able to block three-pointers is really impressive. He's a threat all over the court defensively.
For sure, for sure. And then after that, I went to Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, another top recruit that Kentucky brings in every year, freshman small forward. He's averaging 12.6 points, 7.5 rebounds. He's a great athlete, strong defender. He doesn't shoot threes very well, but he's proven to be a clutch player and somebody who's not going to turn the ball over a lot, and just all around very, very solid with a lot of potential looking ahead to the next level. He's the guy I put number two.
Yeah, and kind of you look at his rebounding numbers and what he's able to do for them right behind Davis, and that's really what's putting him, you know, ahead of a guy, Deron Lamb. I don't know if you have him at three, but, you know, his ability to just stay consistent as a freshman it mirrors kind of what Brad Beal is doing right now for the Gators.
Right, and then this is where it got very tough for me. I felt like you could put any of four guys at the number three spot, and the guys I listed, I have them in this order. I have Terrence Jones, Brad Beal, Kenny Boynton, and then Deron Lamb.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. I'm fine with Terrence Jones where he is.
The thing with Terrence Jones, he's been really inconsistent, but for all that, still scoring 12.5 points, 6.4 rebounds, 1.8 blocks per game. And he's not a terrible shooter either. Like, he doesn't take a lot of threes, and sometimes it's ill-advised when he does, but he's hitting like 35%. He's not totally killing you out there. And when what he does defensively with steals and blocks is something that I thought bumped him up to three for me. But he's got his good days and his bad days, and on his bad days, he's 8 or 9, but overall, I got to put him in a three.
Yeah, and it would be a little bit closer with me. At this point, I'd probably put Brad Beal three, just with the way that he's kind of elevated his game through SEC play when it really begins to count for Florida and for these teams. You know, a big reason why Florida is on a 7-game win streak right now, win streak, is Brad Beal, and I think just his importance and what he's done when Florida has needed a boost in rebounding, you know.
Right.
And he's really taken, like, he could be a 5-rebound guy a game, like, really easily, but whenever he's delving into, you know, 10 rebounds a game in SEC play, like, that's what's putting him over the top.
Right. What he gives you as a rebounder is huge, and Kenny tries to make up the gap, because Kenny Boynton was, like I said, number five for me, but he tries to make up the gap with better shooting, better scoring, and fewer turnovers, but what Beal gives you as a rebounder is just superior, so that's why I had to put Boynton number five. But I think what was interesting is then comparing Boynton and Doron Lamb. I think they're very similar players in a lot of ways. Talk about them.
Yeah, I don't know. How do you think that they're similar? I'm not really seeing that as much.
Well, I mean, they're both guys that, in some sense, a lot of people view them as shooters, and that's what they are. They're both great three-point shooters. But they also have the ability to slash and score, and both were more known for that in high school before they came to college and became more of the shooter types. And are kind of reintegrating that part of it back into their game. So in that way, offensively, I feel like they're similar in that, you know, guys who most known for the three, but have, as their careers have gone on, sprinkled in a lot of the driving, slashing kind of stuff too.
Yeah, that is impressive how he's kind of evolved his game a little bit. But I'll definitely give Brad the nod over him. But I don't know. Would you put him over Boynton though? Is that what you have right now?
I have, like I said, Jones, Beal, Boynton, Lamb.
Oh, Jones, Beal, Boynton, Lamb. Oh, okay, so you do have Kenny over Lamb.
Yeah, that's the one I wanted you to talk about, right, though. I think it's close.
They're both
also very good at not turning it over. I think if they match up on each other, which could happen, I think that'd be interesting.
It would be really interesting to see.
So then after that, it's a bunch of Florida guys. I have Irv, Patrick, and Murphy in that order.
Yeah, it kind of shows you how you think this game. When you look at the sheer talent that Kentucky has, you are going to be bearing a lot of Florida starters because they're good at one or two things each, whereas these Kentucky guys are just so talented. They can mix all these different talents together, whether it is shooting, rebounding, you know, and especially defensively, they are, you know, far superior to Florida at the current time. But what did you have? You had
Irv, Patrick, and then Eric Murphy in that order.
I would flip Murphy and Young. You think?
Well, here's the thing. It still bothers me that, and from as much as I complain about this with Patrick Young, that Eric Murphy can't grab any rebounds. It just bothers me.
Yeah, he has horrible, and it's not even like a positioning thing. Like, he's in position a lot of times. He's able to get the elevation and even sometimes separation from another big man to get a rebound. He has horrible hands.
Yeah,
and I don't know if it's a matter of, you know, not coming down strong with the ball and keeping it protected, and other people are just able to, you know, to graze it or touch it, and it flies out of his hands. But he has absolutely horrific rebounding. And on defense, he's down low. You know, it's not his offensive rebounding numbers, because he is, you know, out at the three-point line a lot of times. But it's his defensive numbers that are just, you know, it's not what you would expect, even out of a more finesse big man. You know,
right,
stupid as it is to call somebody that, a finesse big man.
Yeah,
But a finesse power forward.
right. A little bit of an oxymoron.
Yeah, but he does. It's, you know, it's below what you would expect, but so are Patrick's rebounding numbers at the current time. And Eric's actually giving you kind of, you know, an extra boost, a scoring boost right now, and he's really a tough guy to guard. You heard it from, you know, Mississippi State's coach when he said that, you know, pretty much said in essence that he's the toughest matchup in conference play. If he's actually knocking down his shots, there's really no true one way to stop what Eric Murphy gives you, just because he is going to get those open looks. It's impossible. Unless you keep somebody just attached to him all the time, he's going to be open as the fourth guy around the perimeter.
Right. He provides a unique threat, but when I look at it, you know, Patrick Young's a better rebounder, he's better defensively, and he's actually scored more points than Murphy has this year for all he's done with the three, because Patrick Young is shooting 62.4%. And I know your boy Ricardo Ratliff at Missouri is shooting like 70-something, but it's a lot of, obviously, because he gets to throw down a lot of dunks and gets a lot of wide-open looks. But still, there are some, he's had post moves in there, and he's shot well.
He's had a couple perfect games and a couple where he's just had one shot off and stuff. So certainly, when Patrick gets high-percentage chances, he is going to dunk them, and he is going to, you know, he's going to finish strong. But we're ranking these guys on currently going into this game, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, in that case, you would have to. I tried to balance it versus overall versus going in versus other stuff, but given what Patrick Young's done the last couple games, he could go down for sure.
He could be. So are those 9 and 10?
No. Patrick and Murphy are 8 and 9 because number 10 is Teague.
Oh, yeah.
Number 10 is Kentucky's Marquise Teague, and I think it's important to touch on this. Basically, let me give you the rundown. He's shooting 41% and 32% from three, turning the ball over almost 3 times a game, and only averaging 4.4 assists. And I'm pretty sure I could throw 4.4 lobs per game to Anthony Davis and Terrence Jones. So you got to find it. It's just, he just hasn't been very good. He's been the weak link, and he was another guy that in the chain of Kentucky point guards has come in as a highly rated recruit. But this one, unlike John Wall and Derrick Rose and Tyreke Evans, hasn't exactly lived up to expectations so far.
Well, it was really almost crippling for them at the beginning of the season. Like, it is almost a panic button that this guy, all right, compared to what we've had in the past, like, it's going to be a long process for him to be, you know, functional for us at the point guard position and somebody who can really facilitate the kind of talent that we have around him. I don't know what he was expecting coming into the season, that he would have a huge scoring load, or that he would have to score, or, you know, if he was one of those guys that was thinking a little too far ahead with their career and what he wants to do. But he didn't, and I don't really think he has yet bought into the kind of offense that they should be running at the moment, because just his turnover numbers are, and granted, he is a freshman, but we go back to that argument that we've seen a lot of Kentucky freshmen, like Kid Gilchrist, like the John Walls, like the Brandon Knights, have it under control at this point of the season.
Right, very true, very true. And I think now that we've gone through all these players, we can look back on it. And I think the point of this, more so than anything, was to see that I have Kentucky guys 1 through 3, and then Florida's in the pack of 4, 5, 7, 8, 9.
Yeah, 2 of the last 3 are Florida starters.
So it's just, I mean, I'm not saying it's impossible for them to win, but you see just by this rough outline where there's certainly a talent disadvantage.
Well, you see the kind of dichotomy in the front court where you have, you know, Kentucky's front court guys in the top 3, and you have 2 of Florida's.
They're 8 and 9.
On the bottom. And, yeah, and I would be, you know, I would throw Will Yeget in as a start, because Will Yeget's going to start against Kentucky. I don't think there's any qualms about that.
Potentially, but he ranks 8 or 9 too on this list.
Yeah, but I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's like Florida's front court is so, like, I don't even know if Billy knows exactly who he is going to start in the front court next game, because they are going to get outplayed in that facet of the game. There's no doubt about it, I don't think.
Right. So now that we've kind of looked at every player, what's one key matchup, player on player, that you're going to be watching in this game that you think is going to have a huge impact on the outcome?
I think, like we were saying, the Beal Lamb, or, you know, I'm trying to think who would be guarding Eric Murphy.
Well, that's one that I looked at a lot, because I think you look at Murphy versus Terrence Jones and you see, there's a lot of blow-by potential there. There's a lot of, I think, athletically, speed, size, strength, everything. Murphy's really going to struggle with that.
And the only way he's going to be able to keep up offensively is if he's hitting shots. He's not going to get anything inside.
But there's no reason Terrence Jones can't get out there and guard him, too.
That's the thing. I mean, is this the game where, like, Eric Murphy he's just not even a weapon. He's not even a factor out there, and he could really lose a lot of minutes in that sense.
If it is, that would be bad for them.
Yeah, they're going to have to play Will Yeget and Patrick Young heavy minutes just to try to keep up defensively in the front court. And just hope they keep up on the perimeter.
It could well be, but when you talk about giving Patrick Young heavy minutes, I worry about him staying on the floor in this game, because you see, you know, Murphy gets blown by, and then Patrick Young steps over to try to help, and then he fouls, and then even if they just throw it into Anthony Davis, Patrick Young tries to handle it, and this huge guy is being loopy all over him and hook shot, and you try to get up there, and you foul him, and I hate to project foul trouble, because it's such a thing that could happen or it could not happen, but if there was a game that the matchup seemed to dictate that he could get in some trouble, I think this would be it.
If Patrick Young's having confidence issues, this probably isn't the game where you want to test them
right,
against Sandy. Because all he's going to get his shot blocked. You know, even though he's 6'9", he's powerful and all that. His setup for a post move is so slow. When he gets it, he thinks about, do I really, really, really want to do this? Mm-hmm. Then he takes a dribble and he pauses again, and then he goes into the hook shot.
Right.
Or then he goes into the spin move towards the basket. So, you know,
even if he was somehow able to, like, throw a pump in there and Anthony Davis jumps, and, like, he's still going to recover and toss it like that. I don't see how Young can really score in this game. It's whether he's on the floor or not, but. Right, we've talked this thing to death. Do you have if UF is going to win, what's the one key that you think is going to be, like, maybe it's something that shows up in the stat sheet, maybe it's a tempo thing, but what's the one key that they have to really focus on to get the win here?
Brad Beal's going to have a double-double. He's going to have a double-double performance again. They're going to need, and it's not just going to be 10 rebounds, 10 boards. He'll have to hit that mark in on the rebounds, but he's going to have to score, you know, 15, closer to 20 points, I think, for them to keep pace. And I only say that because Brad isn't going to score all of those from the three-point line. If he's able to create a mismatch with somebody on Kentucky, I don't know exactly who that might be.
Well, I mean, like, Kid Gilchrist can guard him. Even, like, a guy like Lamb could guard him. Yeah. Lamb's 6'4".
Yeah, there's a lot of guys, but he's the one guy who's gonna be able to score closer to the basket for Florida in this game, I feel like, you know, if anybody is. So if he's able to get a good chunk inside, then yeah, that's possible. I don't know. Another way is, I guess you could say, Florida's going to have to shoot, you know, astounding from the three, but that's kind of, you know, a given.
Well, the one that I'm going with is, I think, and we talked about this guy a little earlier, I think they're going to have to get Teague to turn the ball over a lot. I think they're going to have to find a way to knock Kentucky's offense out of rhythm and make him give you the ball 6 or 7 times, give you those extra possessions, and keep Kentucky's offense from doing what they do so well, and that's just being able to throw it inside and let those guys go to work.
Yeah, certainly. Sorry to cut you off, but if he has a horrific game like that,
I mean, I think that
he would be. Kentucky has other, like, he would be yanked, man. I mean, there's no way.
Well, I mean, who's going to run the point? Is, like, Darius Miller going to bring the ball up?
Perhaps. You're talking seven turnovers. That's.
For as much as he's struggled, they've let him play through that kind of thing a lot of times, I feel like.
But this is the importance of this game. I don't think they would let it slip away like that, being that this game is going to be for, you know, not outright first place in the SEC, but for a first place tie between Florida and Kentucky.
Right.
I don't see.
Well, either way, if you can knock their primary point guard out of the game, then
yeah,
get the other guy into turnover
troubles too.
Like, whoever it is, you need to win the turnover battle if you're Florida. All right, we've already gone pretty long on this. In lieu of Gator guarantees, I'll just ask you for a. You don't necessarily need to give me a score prediction, but maybe a winner and a margin of victory kind of thing.
Even though, you know, I'm going to be going driving about 12 and a half hours up there, and you know, I would like to see a good game. I think I'm going to go Kentucky by about 12 points.
I mean, that's exactly what I was going to say.
I think it's going to be about 7 points with about a minute left, 7-8 points, and Kentucky's going to knock down their free throws and stretch it out.
Yeah, I think Kentucky by 12, too. And it's a thing where maybe Florida's the kind of team you can hit a few three-pointers in a row, or maybe Rosario has a great game, and something can happen where Florida gets a spark and gets on a run and makes up the gap in talent in some other way, but it's just too much. Going on the road in that environment, on short rest with Kentucky as good as they are, it's too many factors stacked against you, I think.
And another thing, just to think about it, if you're like, oh, well, Florida's on a 7-game winning streak, you know, they're winning despite all this. They're nowhere near playing their best basketball was back in December. We've heard it plenty of times against Florida State and all that. That was probably the best we've seen this team play, and they're not even close to that level right now. In Kentucky, they seem to be elevating their game every week in SEC play. And like you said, if they can just get a little bit better at the point guard position, they're the clear-cut favorites for a national title this year with the talent that they
have. I think so. I'm going to have a hard time not filling them in my bracket, but that about does it for our extensive Kentucky preview. We've got you, hopefully, everything you need to know about Florida basketball found its way into that show. If you have any feedback, you can send it to us at podcast@alligator.org. You can find us at facebook.com/alligatorpodcast. You can find us on Twitter at Alligator Sports. You can also find me at Greg Luca. You can find John Booth
at JJ Booth.
And we will be back probably sometime next week or maybe next weekend to give you another basketball update. Obviously, we'll have to recap this Kentucky game. You know, we might even try to get maybe a road podcast going. We'll see what we can do. But there's a lot of options, and we will be back next week. Until then, thank you for listening. Lean grind.